Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon, and we're going to do a podcast with Jeff Shackelford where we talked a little bit about the ball and the heated debates that have happened as of late around this idea of do we roll back the ball or do we not. And then Tiger Woods did what Tiger Woods did over two rounds at the Valspar Championship. So we spent the first, I'd say, 20, 25, 30 minutes talking about Tiger and what's looked good and what he's doing great and the things that are exciting. I mean, this is crazy. It's in March. And Tiger Woods has got a chance to win a PGA Tour golf tournament. I mean, we've talked about him trending in the right direction, but I sure didn't think, to be honest, I didn't think this would ever happen. And now I really didn't think it was going to happen this quickly into the PGA Tour season. It has been a lot of fun to watch. This is a guy that looks super confident on the golf course. He looks like he's really enjoying being out there. He's playing alongside the Rorys and the Jordans, and he's playing better than them at times. He's dominating the fields, and this is great. I mean, a week after Phil Mickelson breaks that long, long streak he's been battling with over the years of his last PGA Tour event, we've got Tiger Woods in the hunt. Who knows what will happen over the weekend? I just would love to see him continue to play at least up to the level he's played at. I don't know if that's going to be good enough to win, but it sure has been fun to watch. Of course, this week's Clubhouse episode is brought to you by Ogio. I've mentioned the Mutant Travel Bag a few times, and I always do because I absolutely love it. It is enormous, and I think that's very, very important. When you have a golf travel bag, it's light, but it's huge, which to me, when you're going on a golf trip, you've got to make sure you bring a few things. You got to bring a couple of pairs of golf shoes. You've got to bring some jackets, a vest, maybe some rain pants. You can stuff all that stuff in the Mutant Travel Bag from Ogio, and it'll still weigh under 50 pounds. The bag is lightweight. It has huge oversized wheels to roll around airports. It keeps your club safe with oversized, fully padded compartments up top, and it's got these huge bags on the left and right side to fit shoes, running shoes, workout gear, whatever you need to make sure that you're comfortable on a golf trip and you enjoy your time out there. That is the Mutant Travel Bag by Ogio. And if you go to ogio.com, you check out all of their gear, golf bags, backpacks, travel bags, all of the stuff. When you're checking out, if you use the Clubhouse at checkout, no spaces, you'll save 20% on all of it. 20% off right off the top. That is from your friends at Ogio, my friends at Ogio. Their stuff is great. Check all of it out at ogio.com. And Jeff Shackelford and I went really, really long today, so I am not going to bore you on the intro with my normal stuff. I'm just going to get right to it. Tiger Woods in contention at the Valspar. Jeff Shackelford here to talk about it on the Clubhouse. And in kind of an emergency Clubhouse, I was going to have Jeff Shackelford on to chat about, he's been a little cranky lately, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but I wanted to have him on to chat about the ball debate this week and some of the other stuff he's been talking about, but I mean, we have to start talking about Tiger Woods. He's co-leading as of now. Who knows what it's going to be by the end of this Friday. But Jeff Shackelford back on the line here on the Clubhouse. Of course, you can find him at jeffshackelford.com. Golf Week, the Shack House podcast. He's on Golf Channel, always well-dressed. And Shack, I don't know where you stood with this Tiger is back. What's he going to do? How's he going to play? Will we ever see anything close to what we saw before? I was definitely on the end that said, I think he's done. Where do you stand and how surprised are you as we sit here and look at a co-leader, Tiger Woods, at 42 years old?
I'm a little surprised that he's leading at a place he hasn't played a whole lot because I'm a big horse for course believer when it comes to Tiger and that he's out of his element and at a place he doesn't normally go to. So I didn't have high expectations. That would be the only reason for surprise there. I pretty much watched, I think, every hole at Torrey Pines and Riviera except for a couple, and I loved everything I saw, and more importantly, the attitude and kind of the mindset. The only concern I actually had after those tournaments out here in the West was he wasn't the Tiger of old in terms of kind of getting locked in and not really talking to anybody. And I thought, well, is that – you could read it two ways. It's either a great sign that he's just kind of pacing himself and he's a new person – he appreciates, you know, kids who yell out his name, and he enjoys talking to his playing partners. But then part of me thought, well, okay, but he's got to get kind of locked in at some point here. But maybe the new guy won't be the old guy in that sense. And if he can play well, being affable and chatty on the course, that's even better. So that to me was the only thing I thought: is he just pacing himself? And I think that ultimately that's what it is. He set great expectations, or I should say reasonable expectations, And that's really cool. That's really exciting because that's been a problem for him in the past. I think he's put too much pressure on himself.
Yeah, I mean, it seems as though throughout this return, I don't even know what number it is at this point.
Yeah,
but this,
it's
fifth,
can't keep track.
Sixth. I mean, what are we at? But you know, the return.
Yeah,
technically,
it might be. Yeah.
But you know, like this return, the approach has seemed to be a little bit what guys like you and guys like me and other, you know, golf commentators, if you will, have almost been wanting Tiger to do. Play in some events you're not used to. You know, get, as he likes to say, get the reps in. I think when he committed himself to this and next week at the Arnold Palmer, that looked like Tiger was taking a page out of this idea that you need to be out there in tournament play, you need to be between the ropes, and you need to get those types of feels. And he's doing that, and every single round we've seen him play, he looks more comfortable. He looks like he's swinging at it better. And the biggest surprise to me is how comfortable he looks putting. I mean, I used to feel like Tiger would never miss a big putt. And then the last 8 years, I never felt like he'd make a big putt. And now it seems like he's knocking these in, not just knocking them in, but knocking them in dead center. It's been really impressive how comfortable he's been on the greens in a short amount of time back.
Yeah, the touch is incredible, and the stroke looks great. And he clearly looks a lot happier on Bermuda than he does Poa. But he putted very well at Torrey and Riviera for the most part, the second round of Riviera. He didn't make a few that he thought he should have made. But overall, he looks very comfortable around the greens, and that's pretty incredible. And I think really what we've ultimately learned from this, Shane, is that he just wasn't physically able to come back the way he is this time, which is play a few more events or play an event randomly that you haven't played and go places you're not comfortable and hit balls and go through. I mean, he even practiced a couple times at Riviera after play and pro-am and practice round, went down to the range to make adjustments and things like that that he wasn't doing in previous comebacks. So he just looks so able to go after any shot, and there's never any hesitancy. Yeah, it's a strange thing, but if you've had a bad back, you know, you watch for it, and never any hesitancy to duck under ropes or go down quickly to pick up a ball or pick up a twig. And so the back is just, it just doesn't look like it's an issue at all.
I mean, I agreed. I mean, he seems very healthy. He had a drive today that went 343, which will get us into another debate later on. I can only imagine.
Amazing.
343 uphill, by
amazing.
The way. I mean, he's 42 years old. It was the longest drive on the par 5 all day long. Nobody had hit the green. He had an iron in. It looked like 8 at Augusta. He was hitting that one straight up the hill, and he kind of was walking after it. I thought he thought he was going to get close to being, you know, at least on the green. Still was able to make a birdie. You know, his iron play throughout the return, I mean, he struggled with the driver when he was in California. He really struggled with it at Riviera. But the iron play has been there. I mean, we've seen him throw darts at it.
It let him down at Riviera. He was actually more annoyed by that than the driving, even though he kind of, it got a little ugly in round two. But the iron play was awful at Riviera. But then whatever he did to adjust, he was great at Honda.
Yeah, I mean, he seems, at least this week, he has seemed very, very locked in. The distance control has been pretty amazing considering the conditions and the course he's playing. This is one of the toughest courses they play all year. These are two back-to-back events he's playing where he's playing golf courses that I would say, and I think you probably agree, don't necessarily fit his game. Not exactly the type of golf course you expect him to play. I thought he was going to miss the cut at the Honda. I don't know where you stood on that. But, you know, this is a guy that is taking a different approach, not just to events, but to me, I feel like he's taking different approaches off the tee. He seems to be hitting driver a little bit more, but when he doesn't feel super comfortable with it, I love when he pulls that three wood out. It seems like he's going to hit that three wood in the fairway almost every time. It's almost like a complete contrast to when he pulls the driver out.
Yeah, I know, and you kind of almost wonder if he's better off in these tournaments where he's hitting driver less often, but he also feeds off of that distance, so it's kind of a tricky one. I think he just likes tough golf courses, and I think he likes wind and firm greens. I mean, the greens at Riviera were so firm. Torrey were pretty firm, and I think this kind of golf is better for him. This is where the experience shines, and I'll be honest, you know, a lot of the younger players, you do question still some of their, not their ability to play in tough conditions, but their desire, their enjoyment of it, whereas I think Tiger is a little bit old school, like a Tom Watson, or Well, really take your pick of most of the great players that kind of enjoy the challenge of wind and tricky conditions. I mean, he's complaining in the post-round interview about how much work he and Joey had to do with the wind, but I think he secretly loves it. I think he's bored by just normal kind of bland desert golf, for instance. Yeah, I think that's why he didn't play the Career Builder. I mean, he'd be bored. He likes to be challenged, and the great players in the history of the game have almost gotten off on that. Like, it's like, throw the crazy stuff at me. That's more fun for me than just boring old normal 72-degree light wind golf.
Yeah, there was a story in the Wall Street Journal earlier this week, and it was about Phil Mickelson and Tiger and how they are single-handedly, and again, I think you'll probably roll your eyes when you hear these words too, but, you know, saving professional golf. They're bringing a new energy to the PGA Tour.
Yeah, reinvigorating is the right way. It's they're not saving it. They're bringing the thing we talked about, I think, the last time we chatted, the fun of old guys versus young guys, or the variety.
Yeah, but it's
back.
It's interesting because Phil's been playing great golf this year. I mean, I think it was inevitable that he was going to get a win. Who knew what was going to happen with Tiger Woods? We've seen him, as I said, progressively getting better week to week. He looked great at the Honda. He's obviously looking great this week. And it's almost overshadowed a little bit of some of the big names in golf who are really struggling this year outside of Justin Thomas. And you've seen Dustin Johnson get a win, but Jordan Spieth playing alongside Tiger this week has really struggled with this game this year. And then Rory McIlroy continues to befuddle the golf world with his wedge play and his putting. Do you feel like those stories are getting lost a little bit because we're focused so much on Phil and Tiger?
Oh, for sure, and that's fine. They get plenty of attention, and we should focus on the guys who are playing well. I don't think it's really a mystery with Rory what the issue is. It's the same thing it's been for a while now, and it just, the short game is just it's not great. And again, I don't know how much of a lover of wind and firm, fast conditions he is. I mean, he's even really admitted that a few times recently. And by watching him at Riviera, it was perplexing because the ball striking was pretty excellent every time I watched him, and which was a lot because he was playing with Tiger. And around the greens, the putting is there. That's the thing I think that's most perplexing with him. It's there. There's a nice stroke. There's touch, but there was no consistency to his routine. The process of reading putts, I mean, and this is, I mean, I don't even watch those things that closely, but my gosh, it was just so blatantly obvious that he's either got a lot on his mind on the greens or he's not putting enough thought into what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, when do we, and I hate to say sound the alarm, I mean, we all know golf is hard. I feel like I'm a defender of players more than maybe I should be. I mean, you know, it's you know, he's fine, it's been a couple of months, they're going to go through lulls, that's okay. But at what point with Spieth's putting and basically Rory's game from 150 and in, do we quote-unquote sound the alarm and say, you know, this is an issue and these guys who are some of the best in the world are not going to win golf tournaments with the games they're presenting, especially around the greens?
Yeah, I'm not going to sound the alarm on Rory yet for a few reasons, but I would sound the alarm on the Spieth putting thing. And I'm with you on that. I kind of rolled my eyes at some of the people citing those early stats, and it's like, geez, come on now, let's let's give it a little time. And then I've seen these two footers of late, and I've watched the stroke pretty closely, and it's just also blatantly obvious. His forward press and his routine looks horrendous. It's just, there's a hesitancy. He you know, before, when he's on with his putting, yeah, he varies things a little bit. He varies his grip sometimes, but there was always that put the putter down, you know, practice strokes, putter down, forward press, back and through. And now you watch that forward press. It's not yippy. It's just hesitant. And it's, I mean, to miss these two footers is not a big deal, except the way they're missing. I mean, they're barely catching the hole. And to me, that is the time you do sound the alarm. Like, what is going on there?
Yeah,
and maybe he just needs to shut it down. He's probably overthought the whole thing and probably just needs to go on a vacation and forget about it for about a week.
Get away from the game. I feel like some of these guys forget to do that. I mean, he exhausted himself a couple of years ago. I mean, after his big season, you know, flew all across the world I mean, you're 22 years old. You can still exhaust yourself. We'll see what happens with Spieth. I mean, of course, a guy that once he gets to Augusta, who knows what happens with his game. It seems
right,
to
exactly.
really lighten up when he gets there.
Exactly. Yeah, that place does things to people. I mean, just listening, I was down at the Toshiba Classic yesterday, and Tom Watson, he doesn't even play the Masters anymore. And just watching the way he perks up talking about it and going there and looking forward to just going and practicing and hanging out and all that, it there's a switch that gets flipped for these guys. So, yeah, that would be another reason I wouldn't rule out Spieth. But right now, it is, I mean, it's and just his whole body language and everything was today was just pretty not good.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine, you know, I was thinking up a couple of years ago when it was Rory and Jordan Spieth on Saturday at the Masters, and, you know, the famous
yeah.
quote when Rory said, you know, how the hell is he 2 under? And, you know, Spieth kind of blitzed him, and Rory didn't make a birdie. I was feeling a little bit like that these 2 days with Tiger and Jordan. I mean, I'm assuming that Jordan was amped up to play. I read his quotes in his pre-round presser on Wednesday where he talked about, you know, I'm excited to play with him. I'm excited to see what he looks like. I'm excited to see the comeback, and I'm not sure what to expect to see. And then for him to come out and play this poorly, it has to be dejecting a bit, because I'm sure everyone, I mean, you, me, any golf fan, any sports fan, wants to see Tiger, the 42-year-old, you know, greatest player of all time with Jack, playing with the prodigal son here in the Golden Boy and Jordan Spieth, and Spieth didn't really bring it for 2 days.
It's a long season. That's the good news. Now, whether he can have that perspective, I don't know, because he loves to play well and it's master season and all that, but it certainly has to irk him that he didn't play well. But believe me, I'm sure Tiger is well aware of Jordan's abilities, and hopefully Jordan keeps that in mind. It's a cruel game, and it, you know, 6 months from now we could be talking about how, well, Tiger peaked back in March and Spieth is here he goes again. He's going to win the FedEx Cup. He won another major. Yeah, it's a nutty game.
It is a nutty game. And so I ask you this as we kind of transition away from Tiger. Can the guy win this thing? I mean, do you see him able to keep the game together 36 more holes? I mean, we saw him in this position a few times. We saw it back in 2015. We saw it at Olympic Club through 2 rounds at the U.S. Open, and he looks good for a while. Is he capable of getting in contention and potentially winning this week? I mean, I can't even believe I'm saying it in March. What is it, his fifth event?
Yeah. Well, it's clear that he's found or rekindled the feelings of being Tiger again, which was kind of the question. Would he get the whatever it is you want to call it, the confidence, the mojo, the feels. and he's got whatever that is that he's finally reconnected with the guy that just does this effortlessly. And so, of course, he can, and of course he will now. I just don't think there's any question. And, I mean, look at Phil. Look what he went through and kind of the feelings he lost and he regained them. And I mean, I think Phil's gone through his period of the what used to be the 45 to 50 lull that so many players had. And when you think about Tiger and Phil, they basically were, when you think of the old time players, they'd come out of college at 22, 23, and they'd have about 20 years, and then they just hit a wall. It just happened over and over again. And I think Phil kind of has done that now. And maybe Tiger had his period too there with his injuries and his scandals and car things and all that nonsense. And he's refreshed. I mean, that was the other thing, Shane. It may be a little strong. He did not give the impression that doing media sessions and doing all the things that he's required to do as being Tiger was bothering him. He seemed to kind of enjoy being Tiger again and being a star and taking it to another level, actually, and, you know, posing for pictures and throwing balls into the crowd with the kids. So he's found whatever that is that we kind of hoped he would find, which is that he enjoys what he's doing again. Because I just think it was pretty clear he was not enjoying himself. Obviously, physically, it was hard. But I also thought he was kind of burned out.
Yeah, it looked a little bit like that. And there was a press conference, I think it was, and you'll know better than me, maybe 2 or 3 years ago at the Hero World in Albany, and he had that pre-tournament press conference.
Yeah.
And it sounded like a guy that was done. I mean, it sounded like a guy that would never
yeah.
swing a golf club in
yeah.
front of a television ever.
And didn't watch it. And by the way, it's not a bad thing to be burned out. You know, again, it's a 15 to 20 years of high intensity play and performance and being in the spotlight is a lot. In other sports, that's it. That's amazing. And, you know, there are a few freaks that carry on longer than others, but it's not unusual to expect these guys to hit a wall after a certain point. And it's great but in a way he was able to use these problems that he had as a way also to just probably get away from the game and help him find the excitement to want to go and do it again. I mean, he's done this a long time now and done it a lot, and you can understand why it could be hard to get excited. But clearly he's also gotten motivated being around the President's Cup and Ryder Cup teams, and sitting around long enough, it finally got the itch back.
Does he have a nickname for you? He has a nickname for all these sand. He said Sandsy today. I mean, probably not one you can say on the podcast. But does he have a nickname for you?
I'm on the S list again. I think not a total, but the vibe I got was he was not happy with me. Probably I was a little hard on him when he skipped out on some of the tournament activities last year at the Genesis. I wrote a couple of things, and he sees everything like that. So he hasn't forgotten that one. I could tell by the way he held the stare after a question and was answered that it was like, I think he's still unhappy about that. But I stand by what I wrote. He blew off everything last year, and there were a lot of kids who were disappointed, and I'm sorry he doesn't like it, but. You know, that's life in the big city.
He said in his pre-round presser this week, I think Karen Kraus was asking him a couple questions about his workout regimen, because he said after the Honda he was going to go lift for 2 weeks, which, again, I'm sure your brain almost exploded when you heard that. He said he ran 30 miles a day in his 20s.
Oh, yeah.
Do you buy
this? I don't know where that came from.
30 miles a day?
Yeah, that was. In fact, you reminded me. I need to send that to a runner friend of mine to get his to have him just call and rant to me. That was absurd. He also there was also a suggestion about baseball playing that was a new one. So yeah, you know how these guys get. They get a little older. The memory gets a little fuzzy. But 30. That's a lot. By the way, I don't mind if he's talking about lifting again, because he looks great, both, well, in person and on television. He's lost whatever that puffiness thing was he had, where he was just kind of not bloated, but kind of bloated. But he slimmed down. He looks physically perfect. I mean, just great shape, but not all pumped up.
Yeah, exactly. Looks like a golfer. That's the key. Let's look like a flexible
golfer.
Yeah, a guy that can hit it 343 uphill, like we saw, longest drive we saw all day on that par 5.
Unbelievable.
You mentioned the older golfers and the guys that get a little older in the stories. Curtis Strange always says, the older I get, the better I was. And, you know, he preaches that a lot during the broadcast.
He was pretty good, though.
And he was definitely really good. So
yeah,
I
don't mind that, though, with some of these guys, because society is forgetting too quickly how good certain people were at the game. And I don't want to sound like an old fuddy-duddy either, but it does annoy me sometimes that people forget how good Curtis Strange was for a while. And, you know, he was the best player on the planet to me for a few years, and or close to it with Greg Norman. And so I don't mind if they remind people, you know, that they played this game too. There's kind of a recency bias that's developed of late that's forgotten about some of these people.
And guys like Curtis Strange played different equipment. Now, this is going to be a segue you'll love. I don't know. I'm trying to think of how you'd say this. You went viral this week. Does that sound like you need to go to the doctor?
I don't know. Did it? Would you give it virality? Did it reach viralness?
I think so. I mean, I was in. Okay. I'm in a little nerdy golf chat with like some of the kind of like the golf blogger, you know, internet people, and we'll chat about things, you know, in and around the game, and it was dominating our WhatsApp chat group for like 3 days.
Nice.
I mean, people were loving it. They were loving you. They were sending screen grabs of certain moments. It's a 9-minute video, and I'll tweet it out if you haven't seen it.
I saw DJ's Hollywood Squares with his best captures of our expressions. I may have to get that one printed out and framed. That was beautiful.
That needs to go on the new JeffShackelford.com, by the way. It does look really good. So it was you and Matt Adams. It was Jaime Diaz, and was it Ryan Burr? And it was a discussion
Ryan Burr was the host, yes.
It was the discussion on the golf ball. And just explain to people who haven't seen it, and again, I will tweet the link out so you can watch the full video, and it is definitely worth your time. But it got a little, and I don't want to say heated. You guys weren't yelling at each other, but there were moments where you were – you know, calling out Matt, and the golf ball debate is a very, very hot and heated one right now.
Yeah, it really is. And the USGA RNA report came out on Monday, and they cobbled together us to talk about it on Golf Central. And we had basically two topics that we, you know, these segments are planned out in terms of the topics. And this one drifted off just a touch, but not much. I mean, we really had to discuss kind of reaction and where we go with this. And, you know, Jaime and I are of the same school that we understand people's love of wanting to hit it longer, but we also love golf history, and we're watching something that I think is getting ridiculous in terms of all the elements, trying to maintain architectural intrigue and trying to get a field of 132 or 144 golfers around a course in a reasonable amount of time that's not able to happen because of this and all the issues that come with it. But then also just basic stuff like you'd really love to see Dustin Johnson hit more than a 6-iron into a par 4 just every once in a while. Or you'd really love Dustin Johnson to truly get the distance advantage he deserves, or the advantage he deserves as a great driver of the ball, both in terms of distance and accuracy for somebody who hits it a long way. Because and Jaime's very adamant about this, and as am I, probably from talking to Jaime, that in the history of the game, usually the best player in the world at the time is almost always the best driver of the ball. And they've been pretty good with long irons, too. And they differentiated themselves that way. And it's very hard now with the distance to do that. So that's kind of the issue in terms of the pro game that we wanted to – that we feel strongly about. So, yeah, the discussion just kind of veered off into ultimately the issue of classic courses is always, as you know, a sensitive one, because those who want to see – distance not regulated, then proclaim their love of the old course and proclaim their love of going to the old places, and it just isn't consistent view, if you will.
One of the things that I of all these things, and I've still been trying to kind of decide or figure out where I stand on this, and that's one of the reasons I was so interested in you guys' discussion, because I loved some of the points that were made. I loved, you know, as you mentioned, Jaime pointing out the fact that, you know, the Nicklauses and the Arnies and you know, Byron Nelson and Norman, and these guys were long. I mean, they all were long, and they were the best in the reason because of that. That helped them so much in the sense of dominating the game. Tiger, of course, would take lines that people had never really seen before. And then you look at now, Dustin Johnson. I mean, Bubba's a two-time winner at the Masters. Phil always got it out there pretty far. I mean, distance is a very, very important thing in golf. But to me, the thing that touches closest to home with me, and it's the same as you, is the old golf course debate. I mean, you know, there's places like Cypress Point, there's places like Myopia Hunt Club that are they cannot host a PGA Tour event simply because they are too short. And then the Home of Golf, which, you know, always hosts, you know, the Open Championship every 5 years, is a place that if there's no wind, these guys with the current equipment they're playing are going to shoot 30 and 35 under to win there. It's just going to happen. I mean, that's just what they'll be able to do to that golf course. So you're basically taking these places and these ballparks, if you will, off the rotation, and to me that does nothing good. I was talking to a pro, and I'm not going to give his name out, but I was talking to a pro the other day about this very subject, and his thing is he thinks it's the driver, not the ball. That's of course another debate, but you know his point, and it's what you said. He said, "When's the last time any of us hit a 5-iron into a par 4?" And my immediate response was Justin Rose at Marion, and that's the only one I could really think of that hit a long iron into a par 4 when it mattered. Yeah. I mean, if they had a big drive, they're hitting wedges into every par 4, wedges, 9-irons, 8-irons.
Yeah, and what a great shot that was. And the golf fan is smart enough to know We don't have moments like that very often anymore where you see that shot and you get to go, wow, that was an amazing shot. It didn't finish 2 feet from the hole, but the pure golf fan loves that kind of, wow, he pulled that off, hanging live, pressure of the U.S. Open, long iron. And that's rewarding in its own right. And in trying to convey that to people, because scoring always comes up, it's kind of an old school thing I just don't know how to deal with anymore. But I'd say, Shane, what's fun in this debate is that things have changed a lot. And so people like Jaime and I, who 5, 8, 10 years ago were considered just nuts and shut up and go away, of course, that's not the case anymore. And I think the biggest change, at least from the good player point of view, is that there are more and more young guys coming along, and people like Zach Blair help, who are highlighting architecture. They're highlighting the fun of playing places at a scale that's more enjoyable to walk. And you have more and more good players saying, I'm tired of walking to back tees. I'm going to look back at my life, and I will have spent 2 months of my life walking to back tees, and that's not very interesting. And then you have I've been waiting for this, good players finally saying, forget that Cypress Point can't host a tour event. They're going to Cypress Point. They finally, they get on there, they get invited, they're excited, and they feel like something is off. They almost feel dirty that, I hit 8-iron into all the par fives, and, it's really cool, but the game has passed it by, and instead of, 5, 6 years ago, a good player saying, why don't they do something? Why don't they narrow it? Why don't they add some back tees? The good player now goes, that's just sad. That's not right. That play shouldn't be compromised because I hit it so far. And that's an encouraging change I've seen.
Yeah, well, what are you hearing? I mean, I know by the way, I said you were cranky. You were getting in debates with Jimmy Walker on Twitter, and you took a shot at Golf Digest. You were going all over the place. What have you heard from tour players about this? What are they excited about with it, and what are they fearful about with it?
Well, the problem is that everybody has a different opinion. The ones, though, who are, I think, the most interesting on this debate, and unfortunately, it's going to be very hard for them to describe their position and to share their position without being criticized, are the guys who are saying, I'm seeing a de-skilling effect. They're not seizing on the numbers as much as, I'm a really good ball striker. I'm a consistent ball striker. I'm very good at what I do, and I hit it a long way too, and I'm not getting the reward I used to get. And Dustin Johnson, God bless him, he tried to explain that in that interview with Tiger a while ago, that, hey, I got a great swing, I'm an athlete, I work at it, my technique is unique, and I still get it a long way, but I'm not getting the benefit that I should for that. There are guys out there who are within 15 yards of me who have no business being within 15 yards of me off the tee. I had a great chat with Adam Scott at Riviera, and he's always been a reduce the driver head size guy. And his position has shifted. I think originally that was kind of a position inspired by Titleist. And it's one I would love to see studied, but, of course, nobody will do it. And he has shifted now to more of a, I'd like to see the driver head size reduced or else to try it just to see what it does in terms of helping to differentiate the really great ball striker from the just very good one. And so the player, though, trying to explain their position on that is put in an awkward spot because they sound like a jerk. I'm a great ball striker. I'm getting screwed. It's a no-win for them. And that's so. And then you have people who just literally will say, well, this is absurd where we're hitting it. And then you have others who just say, hey, that's the natural progression. We're amazing athletes. We could be linebackers in the NFL. And you just stand there and go, okay, yeah, right. And, well, then how come every guy on the Champions Tour, when I go talk to them, says it's ridiculous that they're hitting it longer now than they did in their prime? So spare me your athleticism thing. Obviously, athleticism is part of this, but to act like that's the sole driving force is just absurd.
Well, I mean, and that's something that I've always been interested about in the sense of anything changing in the game. I mean, if it's the ball, the driver, whatever you do. You know, when they started to lengthen golf courses, and namely we'll just touch on Augusta National because it's the only golf course that hosts a major every year. They started to lengthen Augusta, and the reason they did it was because of Tiger and the crew. Because, I mean, Tiger was, you know, hitting wedges into par fives, and they tried to Tiger-proof it, took the, you know, added rough, and then they just kept making it longer and longer and longer. And my point on that always was this just helps Tiger because it's just going to help the best player in the world, the guy that hits it the furthest.
Right.
And does this do the same thing? If you bring out a tournament ball and Dustin Johnson, if he smokes one, he hits it 300 yards, doesn't this help Dustin, Rory, Jason Day, Justin Thomas? Doesn't this make that gap a little bit bigger and now the best in the world are even further away from maybe the 30th to the 50th players in the world?
Yes. Yes, thankfully. I want them to get that reward. I think we've seen golf brought together too much and a parity brought on by some of the things related to the equipment. They should get that distinct advantage if they are putting all of these elements together. Their athleticism, their technique, their fitting of equipment, their instruction, everything, their mind. They should get a huge reward, and I think that's the history of the game has would reflect that.
And is that
but
why
that's always been the case?
I mean, and is that why you think certain players maybe are pushing back on this because they know that would be the case if this came out in 2, 3, 4, 5 years if a tournament ball was introduced or if a driver head was reduced? I mean, is this, do you feel like there's going to be pushback from a majority of the pros knowing that now they'll have to be chasing the top five in the world that are going to be better than them with this stuff?
I don't think they've gotten that deep into this yet. I don't think they've thought that through. No, I don't sense anybody out there lacks the confidence that thinks, oh, I've just been skating by with a so-so talent, but the equipment brings me to another level. They don't think that way. So I think that has not clicked. I think it's only the other way, where they're the people who are the elites thinking they're getting robbed a little bit. And that's only in the last few years. The other thing I would just say on all this that makes the positions that the PGA of America took and the PGA Tour took and folks like Matt and most of the people on social who are kind of trying to defend the poor beleaguered golf ball is that this is just the beginning, Shane. I mean, everything is pointing to we are about to see an explosion in distance that will just blow people's minds. I mean, we know about Cameron Champs of the world, but we're done with people who grew up playing golf with some memory of the violent snap hook from or the goofy tee shot from hitting small-headed clubs with inconsistently manufactured shafts and all the little weird things that the Tiger Mickelson group grew up with. And now we have people who've only know swinging, learning to swing as hard as you can, having TrackMan, having better instruction than ever, and just more confidence to swing hard. And so, to think that this is things are under control, and for these organizations to be peddling this nonsense that you know, things have leveled out, this is not a problem, and it's going to grow the game and all that, they're just going to be embarrassed. Both with the numbers this year and then in the coming years as Cameron Champs of the world replace people who are merely hitting it, you know, 298 off the tee.
I was walking with Cameron at LACC during a practice round. And, of course, at the Walker Cup, you can walk with them. I mean, there's no ropes up. And shout out to David Fabe, by the way, for that. And, you know, the par 5, 14, I think, is the par 5, and it's it's up the right, and it's a great par 5, and the green is just really guarded, and he hits this drive over the right bunker, and I mean, you know, I'd played it 2, 3, 4 weeks before they got there, and you know, I'm a fairly long hitter, and I mean, I didn't even look at the bunker, for goodness sakes. I hit it left of it, and I walked up to Cam and I said, hey, what's the cover on that bunker? And he shrugged. He didn't know what the number was, like 295 to cover it in LA. I mean, you know, that's a that is a big man's poke. And this is a guy, as you said, this is just the first in the line of this that's going to come out, the Tony Finaus, these types of players. Is this bad for golf? Is this debate, is talking about the ball, is the focus on this equipment, considering what we're seeing in 2018 with Phil Mickelson getting a win and all these big names playing well and Tiger coming back and a whole bunch of eyeballs coming back to the game of golf? If they come back to golf and they see this being a topic of conversation on big time shows, is this bad for the game? Is this a bad look?
No, I would say the anchoring one was, because you definitely had an average sports fan looking at that going, are you kidding me? You guys are obsessing about that. And I understood that reaction. The difference here is that technology has been an issue in a lot of other sports, and I think a lot of people actually think it's a fascinating debate to weigh where that fine line is between skill and skill being eroded because of technology. And I think that it may look kind of first world, like a first world problem to a lot of people, but I've always found that once you start getting into some of the dynamics of this, that people do find it interesting. And yeah, you have a mindset of people who just don't want to hear it because they are convinced that the only reason people play golf is to hit it as far as possible, and that at this point in the game, that's what's going to sell the game going forward. It somehow survived 400 years of hard to hit equipment and not hitting it very far, and people somehow were attracted to it, and it actually peaked with probably the worst equipment in the history of the game. To me now, in hindsight, steel shafts and persimmon, tiny persimmon heads, which I don't think anybody wants to go back to, but somehow it peaked in popularity during that. So I think that, you know, it could get ugly a little bit, but when you have Nicklaus and Tiger Woods and even Phil now, who has always taken kind of a, oh, no, it's great for the game, everybody wants to hit it longer, and technology's great. This week, you know, when he was interviewed by Dan Patrick, even Phil sort of taking the point of view of, well, I kind of see both sides of this now. And so when you have the leaders like that and these great sort of iconic players saying this, I think that gets people's attention, that they have a view on it. And if you really step back and think about it, there is nothing to be gained for them by having that view. It's only headaches. It's only people criticizing them in very shallow ways. I remember not too long ago, Shane, you probably do too, that when Tiger came out on this topic of distance, and they all went, well, that's because he doesn't hit it anywhere anymore, and he doesn't want to come back and have those young guys hitting it 40 by him. Okay, well, I think we can cross that one off the list.
Yeah, 343.
Leading the field and driving. Oops, yeah, no. His point of view is coming from somebody who has sat in a boardroom table looking at big plans of a property and saying, hey, there's a great-looking par 4. Oh, wait, no, that's not going to work. We need another 80 yards to make that hole work, and there's going to be homes back there, or there's a wetlands there, and we can't do that. So, okay, we'll cross that one off the list. And that's what he's been through now. And it tells him that it's not good for the game to keep trying to stretch these things out.
All right, Jeff Shackelford just becomes the commissioner of the PGA Tour. You just got named PGA Tour Commissioner. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. I get my own jet and $5 million a year.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, and you already dress pretty sharp, so you already got that part down. I was bummed you weren't part of Golf.com's best dressed. I thought you got it. It was a big omission. But
yeah, well, that's okay. I saw those photos that were part of the package, and those were I couldn't post for those.
You can do the steely look. I know you can do. You got to squint the eyes.
No,
you just
got to
squint the eyes. That's all you got to do. So you're commissioner, and you get to change this. Tell me, what is your, in your opinion, what is the move? What do you do here with the ball, with the equipment, moving forward? Let's say it's 2019, and you can have this passed by 2020.
I get all the players together in a player meeting, which are I'm sure, wonderful affairs. I've always wanted to sit through one of those and say, guys, look, I love that you hit it a long way. Common sense says that the average fan thinks it's really cool. It turns out we did a focus group, and we put a bunch of people on a tee, and they could not decipher the difference between a 290-yard drive and a 330-yard drive. And, guys, I would point you to tennis, which got to a very bleak point, and you're a tennis man, so you can refute anything you want here, Shane.
Okay.
But it got to a very bleak point in the Sampras years, and people lost touch with tennis. And then every once in a while, Jimmy Connors would come around and remind you of how fun it is to watch an old guy with shots and touch and all this cool stuff. And tennis has since modified their ball guys to each court in the Grand Slam events, and voila, we have some legends playing amazingly, and I think you can make a case that there are different styles of tennis. It's not as distinct as I think it would be cool to see, but power can be rewarded and finesse, and love to see for more guys go to the net. But the point is, most sports control the ball to ensure, or in baseball they control the bats. They want to ensure that there is that balance between skill and progress. And I think that a lot of people look at golf, and the greatest moments in golf, the greatest roars, come from not from tee shots, but from executing second shots, the ball hitting the ground and feeding to the hole, putts, chips, recovery plays. And that's what makes people excited, you know, and watching guys move the ball like Bubba in person, and now with Tour Tracer, really exciting stuff. And we've lost some of that in golf, and it's important to maintain some of those elements and ties to the past. And it's also important for us to be able to go back to the great old venues. And you may have to lose just a little bit of distance, or we may have certain events that play with certain rules. And we're going to explore this because it's really not about trying to take money from your pockets or undermine the manufacturers. We want all of that to thrive, and we just feel that if the game was just a little different in terms of the way it's executed, it will be a lot more exciting and fun and rewarding to watch, and it'll be good for the overall health of the sport. At which point they all start throwing things at me, and Pat Perez starts screaming at me from the corner, and all hell breaks loose. I get on my jet and pour myself a gin and tonic and go, oh boy, why do I have this job?
And this is assuming that all the players would be not looking at their phones when you're bringing this up.
Right. You're right.
You have to collect the cell phones.
Yeah.
I'm interested. At first, you know, you brought up a couple good points about the golf shots. And I think this is something that maybe people miss. And this isn't a distance thing. But, you know, you talk about TrackMan and the perfection of the golf swing. That's kind of what I call it, is the professionals have perfected golf. They really have. I mean, we've seen some of the lowest scores we've ever seen in our lives shot in rounds. I mean, we've seen 58s. We've seen a lot of 59s lately. We saw, you know, a 62 in a major. We saw a 63 in a major. At a golf course that I played in. I mean, Erin Hills is not that easy, let me tell you.
Yeah,
and these guys just bring it to their knees. And you know,
yeah.
David Faraday, I think he was on the Foreplay podcast the other day, and he said, guys don't hit bad golf shots anymore. And, you know, I was watching 86 the other day because I don't really have a life. And, you know, they were replaying on a golf channel, and I was watching it. And there were golf shots. You know, Norman's shot famously is
yeah,
off.
Yeah, the forearm.
I mean, it's you know, it's miles right. And that's because with equipment, you actually really had to strike a good golf shot to hit a good golf shot. And I feel like we don't see those types of foul balls anymore. We just see guys, a bad golf shot is just off the green, or, you know, maybe it's 30 feet. And, it'd be nice to see those again sometimes. It'd be nice to see some bad golf shots, you know? I mean, we want to see the good and the bad with this sport, just like you want to in baseball, basketball, football, everything. And to me, that is the issue that I see. Distance is a thing, and it's a number, and it's crazy, and it's hurting golf courses. But I also feel like we don't really see awful shots anymore, which add to the drama of any golf tournament, especially majors.
Yeah, I think the trick in characterizing that is that players would react and go, oh, you just want to see a struggle and you want us embarrassed. And no, it's just we just want to see a little more differentiation so that when we see the great shots, you feel as a fan that they're it's a little more rewarding. Again, like that Justin Rose shot at Marion. Again, visually and where it ended up on the collar, nobody's ever going to cite that as one of the prettiest shots they've ever seen or most dramatic. But if you really know the game and you know the course and you know the situation, as a fan, you go, wow, that was clutch. That was a beautiful shot. And so it's tough, though, to make the case you just made that without players getting defensive about that, but they should know that you're making that from the point of view of a good player who merely just wants to make sure that we don't kind of de-skill the game to the point where it's really, really hard for the elite talent to differentiate themselves from the merely outstanding player.
Yeah, I mean, I always wonder if this is the biggest gap we've ever had between a regular golfer and a pro, and I feel like it has to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got
to
be. You know, because golf is still really hard for most people, and I just feel like the pros have found, you know, every single one of them has found exactly how they should play the game, exactly the attack angle and the smash factor and all those words that come when you go on a track, man. And personally, I mean, I can go, I have a golf swing that's maybe different than what, you know, a professional golf swing would look like, just with what I do and my, you know, how far back I take it, stuff like that. But if I go on a track, man, I have a very good idea of what I'm doing wrong if I'm hitting bad, you know, just by looking at the numbers. And I can only imagine if you spend 4 hours a day on track, man, as a professional golfer, you are going to get to a point where most golf shots are exactly where you want them. They're exactly the number you want them. And that's, you know, that's a pretty nice thing to have if you're playing for $1 million a week.
And that's why now you see guys walking to the range with their little briefcase every day. It's wild. And what's also wild is how many different ways they use it. And I think it's a sensational tool, and I encourage them and I admire them for figuring out each player's best use of TrackMan. Some people, it's just the creative side. It's just the combines and the making practice more interesting element. But that said, again, fine, that's progress. That's a technological element. They still have to go on the course and play. However, it's up to the governing bodies just to make sure that doesn't overtake the sport and kind of strip it of something that could make it that makes it boring or makes skill less important. And I guess I'm always just sort of fascinated that more people who are sports fans get so angry in this debate in golf. And usually it's a selfish thing. It's you're not going to take my distance away. And I get that, but come on. You'd like them to step back and say, hey, come on, look at this as a sports fan. You know, let's get into NASCAR. Let's look at the things that they've done with restrictor plays. Now, the crews outsmart that too, and that's kind of fun in a way that they're clever, and that will keep happening with golf. And I think the governing bodies know that we're about to see this next wave of players who are just going to out everything and outmaneuver the rules, and so the rules need to be adjusted a little. And again, I just don't think it's that big of an adjustment. It's a political fight. It's a brutal political fight. But technologically, and what it would do to the way the golf you'd see out on the tour, I just don't think that taking 10% off drives is going to be noticed that much by the average fan. It will be by the players initially, but it's from a design and setup standpoint, the difference would be huge. And it has to be done, just if nothing else, in anticipation of the next wave. Shane, those tees we added at LA North on the Walker or for the U.S. Open in 2023 were already relevant for this Walker Cup.
Oh,
and I'm not going to say that they weren't supposed to be, but I think the view all of us had was, well, you could try them out, but, you know, this is more for 5 years from now if things keep going the way they are. And guess what? They were already relevant.
Yeah, those guys hit it pretty far. Those they're quote-unquote amateurs, I guess. I mean, they are so good. It's unbelievable.
Well, and yeah.
Yeah,
they
mean,
are. And Champ is a freak because he doesn't swing that hard, and you watch the ball flight and you don't think it's that much by his peers, and there it is every time, 40 yards by guys.
Does this put a little, I mean, Fred Ridley, you know, comes in now at this point in 2018 when this debate is heating up, if you will. Does this put added pressure on Augusta National? Because I feel like if someone's going to do this, it has to start with the Masters, because they're the place that can say, here's your golf ball, this is what we're going to do, and if you don't like it, you know, you don't have to come.
Yeah, I spent the last few days at the Champions event asking former Masters winners what they think of that concept, and the reviews were very mixed. Tom Watson, you know, absolutely not. You can't make guys play one ball for 1 week a year, and then other guys were, yeah, they can do it, and they should do it, and not worry about the rest of the year. So It puts him in a terrible spot, as I said, in that round table that got a little bit feisty. Year one, he has to deal with the PGA Tour and the PGA of America coming from one point of view. And he's basically the tie-breaking vote. And then he's got a golf course where he's got fairways that they mow towards the tee that aren't very pretty to look at, and they're not very much fun to hit a shot into and take a divot off of. And I would think that at some point people are getting a little tired of that, their members at least, and because they now mow the fairways from green toward tee year-round, and it's just not great. And then, he's got to weigh the decision of lengthening some more holes to keep them relevant. I'm working on a feature on the 13th hole for the live from coverage, and it's a big dilemma for them because you want to put that player in the spot where they've been in the spot in the past to decide whether they go for it or not. And so he has to deal with that kind of stuff. And he's a USGA guy, but he's also in his first year and he can't do too much. So it definitely puts them in that position. And then as a good player, he knows that Augusta National does not play as hard or as interesting as it should, because of the way they slow the ball down. If that place were running and like it used to in the old films that you rack up daily and watch, and you watch those drives on 15 roll 40, 50 yards, that place would be incredible. It would. I remember when the ball ran there, and it's just more interesting. It's a better test of skill and everything Bobby Jones and Alistair McKenzie had in mind, I think. Although I don't even know if they could have imagined how good agronomy's gotten and how much the ball would roll at an inland place like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously excited for the Masters. I'm excited for Shinnecock. Yeah. I'm excited to see what these guys do there, what the fairways look like, and the widths of it and stuff like that. We'll be out there in a couple of months kind of getting a preview.
Yeah, well, they're narrower now. Oh, good. So you're going to get to see the newly narrowed. When was the last time you were there?
I mean, I've never been to Shinnecock in my life.
Oh, okay. Okay, so good. So then you won't be tainted by they widened it, and now they narrowed it last fall in reaction to Erin Hills. So you won't have seen the before and after, but it's an amazing place.
You're a golf course nut, and I'm sure you get this question a lot, and then I'm going to let you go. Do you have like a top three? I mean, do you have like a list of these places that you love? Is there a golf course that, if you had one round to play left, you'd go play it, anything like that?
I think it's North Berwick is my two barometers for a golf course, and it's actually, I've expanded it to three things that I ask about a course, and then it breaks off into many offshoot categories. But the first question is, do you want to play it every day? Which speaks to walkability and fun and all that. And then the other question is, do you remember every hole after you've played it? Which speaks to a lot of architectural things, the routing, the general variety of holes. The other one I've added is, would you want to go take your dog for a walk on it? And that one I kind of added after Erin Hills last year, because then I went to Shore Acres on Monday and just stopped in to see the work they've done and to get a kind of a scale cleansing. And the superintendent there, Brian's got this great dog, and it kind of got me thinking, that really says a lot about a course when you could kind of bring the dog out, and it's a beautiful place. It also speaks to the beauty of it and all that. So the places that fit that the most obviously would be North Berwick and Cypress Point and Pebble Beach, although they're really chipping away at that place fast. I'd love to see it get back. Those would probably be my top three.
I played North Berwick, last summer, I guess. Yeah,
Cruden Bay could be right there too.
It's so
it's right on the cusp of being in that group too.
And I played North Berwick. I was on two, and there were people walking their dogs in our line.
Oh yeah,
And my cat, the caddy, had to run out and start yelling at them, and they didn't really understand what was going on. And I was thinking to myself, they can walk the dog wherever they want. This is awesome. This is exactly what I was expecting.
That's part of the experience. Just don't want to hit the dog. But,
You could keep it in the air. Chris Solomon on the famous wall hole at North Berwick, he hit the top of it with a second shot. It kicked on the green and he made a birdie. And I was like, man, that's This probably doesn't happen a ton. That's a pretty impressive good kick, and then, of course, capitalizing on it. We've almost got an hour. This is crazy. Jeff, I appreciate the time. You guys going to do a Shack House following the Tiger experience that happens over the weekend?
Right after the Valspar, we've got the recording time. We're trying to do more of those right after the tournament. And so we will be – we weren't going to, but then when he added the Valspar, why, you know, you have to. It would be wrong because this is exciting, and if he wins, it's going to be a big story in the world of sports. He trended today on Twitter, for crying out loud. I mean, what more do you need to know?
Do you think if you told Tiger Woods he trended on Twitter, he'd know what that meant?
Yeah, he would. I think he would. I think he reads and consumes stuff more than he should. Frankly, I think he reads way too many comment sections, and he. He doesn't forget, and he definitely – but I think he's able to manage it better. I don't think he was managing it very well. And, frankly, you can't blame him if you read some of the things people write. I mean, they're horrific, they're racist, they're nasty and awful, and that didn't help his recovery at various times to be reading some of that stuff. So I think he manages that better too, and I think the people around him manage it better. They put together maybe a little clipping package, and I don't think it's quite as filtered as Donald Trump's daily clipping package, but it, you know, geared towards the only positive. But I think they do a better job of filtering so that he doesn't get too bogged down in that stuff.
Yeah, and I noticed you mentioned the redesign on your website. It really does look great. Have you noticed a bump in traffic this year? I mean, with Tiger being back and some of the storylines, have you noticed a bump at all in traffic? Has it been similar? I mean, is it always going up because you're just so popular?
No, it's not. No, I've had, when you redo a website, of course, you get a lot of hate mail, and I understand that, especially when you had one that was a certain format for 12 years. But I see a little bump, but like at Golf Week, where when we're writing stuff, they've seen huge numbers and huge increases. I, you know, try not to over cover him too much. And then I've covered the distance thing a lot, and that scares people off. Although that was really the basis of my website was back in 2003 and 2004 was following up on the book I'd written. So it always kind of amazes me when somebody writes, say, I'm over covering. It's like, well, I've been doing it for 15 years and I've had pretty much the same exact position all that time. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. I understand it's, there are other things going on, but it's also, I think, a fascinating subject. Like I said, I think it's an interesting one. If you love sports and you love this sport, however it pans out, I think it just raises interesting questions that are great, make for great 19th hole banter.
Yeah, the one thing you really needed to change and update was you had like a blog roll on the right side of your page.
There were
links, there were websites on there that, I mean, you so you've been doing it. You said, have you had a website since 2005? Is that what you said?
Actually, 2004, and then the current, the one you were talking about debuted in August of 2006. So it was, now I had edited out a few. I mean, I have a couple at Yahoo or something?
Oh, man, I went back and was looking at some of the links and some of the places it would direct you. And I mean, it was, you know, it would bounce you to some server and who knows where, and I was cracking up. You know, you were a nice guy. You'd throw people in the blog world. That was what you did back in the day. That was what blogs were. You promoted other golf blogs. You know, they were that was kind of the Wild West of the internet, and it was a fun time to be alive.
I think if I tried to do a blog roll today, there'd be about four. and I do have plans to put back a list of links. I just haven't done it. But yeah, the blog format is kind of it's probably just the word. Just saying the word is so painful, but. I stuck with it because I like the format, and I get paid to write longer things for Golf Week, and so because I weighed a lot of different ways to share the things that I like, and I just said, well, yeah, this is the way I like it. There are it's random. I'm not restricted by anything, any format things. I just get to put up what I want and say, hey, this is what I think of this, or go read this. I think you'll really enjoy it, and that's what keeps it fun for me because. Believe me, there are nights where I just go, oh, geez, do I really need to go write about something or dig something up? But then a good story comes along, and I get excited, and it's like, well, yeah, this is fun. This is this is juicy. We're going to have a lot of fun kicking this around. And so that's what keeps it going for me.
Well, that was Jeff Shackelford. We are 4 weeks from the Masters. This Sunday will be 4 weeks until the final round of the Masters, which is kind of bananas. I can't believe it snuck up on us like this. And I know people are excited.
Yeah, I can't wait. And we have some fun events in the meantime with Bay Hill. And I love the match play, too. And then just kind of watching how – I mean, it's happened last year without Tiger and Phil. But we had a great run-up to the Masters where every top player – had something to hang their hat on from January to up to the Masters, where you said, well, he's got a shot. And you throw in Bubba, we've got the same thing going, only this time it happens to include Phil Mickelson and now Tiger Woods, I think. And, Spieth could turn it around and Rory could quickly turn it around. And all of a sudden we're going, oh my gosh, who's going to win this thing? And it'll come down to a little luck of the draw and who knows what, but I can't wait.
It's going to be exciting. Do you have any targets lined up to attack this week as you prepare? I mean, is there anybody you're going to kind of go after? Me, maybe? I mean, we haven't had a Twitter beef ever.
In terms of the distance?
No, just in general. Just, I mean, if you sometimes you'll yell at people on Twitter. I'm just wondering if you're going to yell at anybody in the coming weeks.
No, please.
Just
come on now.
A little bit.
I only push back at the real loon balls who are nasty or – I mean, the golf pros howling about this. Now Jimmy Walker is a different one because I can't reveal exactly what, but he has some very strong feelings on this issue. Even though he's a Titleist guy, they have nothing to do. I'll just say they have nothing to do with his alliance with Titleist and their insistence that it's a golf ball. He has seen some things that bother him, that drive his position, that stop blaming the ball and stop mentioning 20%. And so I think he's somebody that's going to be very interesting to watch how he is part of this debate. Because he's also a bright guy and an interesting guy. Pat Perez, I expect, you know, that kind of just flailing and throwing stuff out. But keep an eye on Jimmy. He definitely has some – he's coming from this from an angle that I think is way different than anybody else, and so I'll just leave it at that.
And also, something obviously the fire is working. He's playing well this week as well. Tiger Woods
is
got a chance. Jeff Shackelford, you can obviously find him everywhere you want to find him. JeffShackelford.com. Make sure you check out Shack House Sunday evening as him and Joe House will round up maybe a Tiger Woods win. Who knows?
Yep. I can't wait.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Many thanks to Jeff for spending more time than I thought we would spend on a Friday talking about golf and talking about the golf ball and courses and all of the stuff that really have been on my mind the last few days considering what's gone on. I told you I will link you to the debate they had on Golf Central. I will put that link on the Clubhouse Twitter account at the Clubhouse Pod. So go there if you want to watch it. It's 9 minutes, but it is well worth your time. And just a reminder to go to OGO.com. They are great. Their gear is great. The golf bags, the backpacks, the travel bags, everything they have will make your experience on and around a golf course a lot better, trust me. And I love everything they have to travel with. That's all I use at this point, of course. If you go to OGO.com, make sure you use the offer code THECLUBHOUSE. That at the very end, that'll save you 20% off your entire order. So if you get a backpack, a travel bag, a golf bag, all that stuff, you will knock off 20% as you check out. So thank you to OGO. Make sure you check that out. I hope you guys have a great weekend. Hope you get some golf in. It is warming up. It is really warm in Phoenix right now. I'm going to be wearing shorts today when I go out to the golf course. Have a great time. I will be around online throughout the weekend to follow along this Tiger Woods experience. So I hope you do as well. Get out, play some golf, make some birdies, and we will see if Tiger can take home a victory on Sunday.